In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn. Our friend Alan Adams of The Main Edge joins us. Happy Monday there, Al.
Adam, to you as well.
Have things resolved at Shea Adams? I saw a photo of a very concerned Stella with what appeared to be a cat in her spot.
Oh, well, Stella and Scooby have a very complicated relationship. So, every once in a while, we'll just see that relationship sort of playing out in real time. We're fine. As you might imagine, the cat kept the spot and Stella found somewhere else to go.
Well, that's that's cats, right?
Right. Yeah. You're not gonna beat a cat in a battle of wills.
Well, we're glad that peace has been achieved in our lifetime.
Oh, for sure. Hey, man, isn't that Ron Blumberg a hoot?
He is great. He is he's a terrific guy, and the book is wonderful. Kerry was saying, "Well, where is he from? Where is that accent?" And the accent is this: he grew up in Georgia in the Atlanta area, and then of course was in New York for most of his adult life. So he got that, but he's. Yeah, he's a good storyteller.
Yeah. No, that was a great segment. Like that's Epstein's great too. So that's So I guess just good on you.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Well, you've been busy. You saw three movies over the weekend. What shall we talk about first?
I did. You know, it's funny. Like you get these sorts of lulls in the. Over the course of a year of watching movies, like not every weekend's going to be packed with winners, and this last weekend was none of these movies are bad, but none of them are particularly great either, and that's kind of that muddy middle where you're not necessarily jazzed to be, because it's easy to write about a great movie and it's really easy to write about a bad movie, but when you get these movies that are sort of in the middle. It's tough to really muster up the enthusiasm to find the good and the bad to sort of talk about, and it's kind of one of those slates. But fear not, Rich. I'm going to power through just because it's you.
We appreciate that.
We'll start with a movie. It's called Sensation. It's a sci-fi movie, British. Currently available on demand, and it's a movie about this idea of our senses and what our worlds would be like if we couldn't trust what we experience through our senses. It's an interesting premise, and it's got an appealing book. Like the aesthetic is pretty interesting. It's written and directed by a guy named Martin Groff. But it's one of these movies that's not nearly as smart as it wants you to think it is. And so there's a lot of sort of unnecessary convolution that kind of mars a lot of what we're doing. It seems as though the maintaining mystery was prioritized above all else, including narrative coherence. So that makes it tricky. But the basic gist is you've got this guy named Andrew, played by Eugene Simon, who has long sort of wondered about his heritage. Like, his dad's been out of the picture since before he was born, and he doesn't really know much about his mom. And his mom doesn't seem interested in helping him find out more. So he reaches out and connects with a geneticist, this guy, Dr. Marinus, played by Alistair Cumming, and gets a DNA test. But the DNA test, while it doesn't give any matches, it uncovers the fact that Andrew is special. And what that means is, he has this rare mutation that means his sensory receptors, the receptors in his brain, are far more powerful than those of normal people. And so he gets sort of sent off to this special school of sorts, led by these two women, Nadia and May, played by Emily Wyatt and Jennifer Martin, respectively. And basically he and his fellow students or patients or subjects or whatever they are, sort of train to harness these talents. That eventually could potentially allow him to not only increase his own perception, but control the perceptions of others. But as often happens with things like this, the more time he spends there, he starts having some questions. Not everything he's been told is adding up. But, I mean, how do you know what's real when you're in a place where someone might already be controlling everything that you perceive? And that's basically the gist of it. It's, again, look, having one's perception controlled by an outside force and all the existential and metaphysical questions that that control could raise, that's an interesting premise that could be pretty engaging if you really, you know, did some in-depth exploration. But this movie never really gets there. Like, the nearest thing I can come to it, it's like almost like an off-brand version of The Matrix with just like a little sprinkling of X-Men. Like, it's a movie where they clearly feel that expressing the ideas is enough, which basically leaves us kind of skipping along the surface without ever really digging in. Like I said, the central premise has some potential, and there are some really striking images scattered throughout. The director does a great job of building tension, but a lot of times that tension is ratcheted up just for the sake of doing it, which means that you're just sort of left to deflate in an unsatisfactory manner rather than getting any sort of strong follow through. I don't know. It's one of those movies where there's just a little bit too much unearned navel gazing for my taste. The performances are fine, although everyone seems a little befuddled and maybe a little over their head. Basically, what we have is this Sensation wants to be a deep movie. And at first glance, one could argue it is a deep movie. But if you spend even a little time on closer examination, it just becomes shallower and shallower until you're just splashing puddles. And ultimately, the only sensation you'll get from Sensation is mild disappointment.
Oh, man, that's a blurb, right? That should go on the poster. All right, so much for that. Where are we going next?
Let's talk about a movie called Monday. And I wasn't super familiar with this movie when it sort of crossed my radar. It's a sort of romantic drama directed by, I'm going to say this name once, and we'll see how it goes. It's directed by a gentleman by the name of Argyris Papadimitropoulos. As you might guess,
once is enough.
Very Greek. And it is the story of basically this passionate encounter between two American expats in Greece that starts developing into something more, although it's unclear if that's the right thing for either of them. Now, there's a lot of heat here. For instance, the sex scene to runtime ratio here is extremely high. and that goes along with the standard relationship struggles. And look, it's not always clear why these people are making the choices they're making. The specifics don't really matter. This entire movie revolves around two people who are just hot for each other. It's all about seeing where that fire takes you. So you've got a woman named Chloe, played by Denise Goff. She's an American lawyer living in Greece. She's been away from the States for a year and a half and is heading out for one last Friday night before she gets on a plane and heads home. She winds up at this club and is dancing to the music being played by the DJ, this guy Mickey, played by Sebastian Stan, who is, who I'm sure everyone involved in this movie was very happy is in this movie, considering what's going on with him TV-wise. He's also American, that commonality is the sole reason that the two are introduced by Mickey's friend Argyris, who's a very charming sort of sketchball kind of guy, very reminiscent of at least one dude that you see every time you go into a Greek pizza place, if that makes sense. The sort of open shirt and medallion type of guy. But what follows, they have a night of passion, ends in an embarrassing public place, despite the fact that she's going back and Mickey has a very severe case of arrested development. Wouldn't you know it, they fall for each other. The rest of the movie follows it's a series of leaps forward in time. And all of these time, we always land on a Friday. I think the effort is to sort of capture the implication of the party time's ending that's suggested by the title. and we watch the relationship evolve. She's the responsible one, he's the flighty one, and what once seemed like a smooth blend looks like the bubbling resentments are really starting to sort of, you know, sort of boil over. But again, as I said, the physical side of things is ongoing. Look, it's been a while since I saw a movie with this many distinct sex scenes in it. Like, I lost count, but it was at least half a dozen and probably more. And this isn't a condemnation necessarily, but it definitely felt gratuitous in a number of spots. Look, finding the strength to make a tough relationship work is difficult, but you could argue that finding the strength to end a relationship that's not working is even more difficult. And the people at the center of this movie kind of play that struggle out. There's like toxic argumentativeness and sexual dynamism and this weird ebbing and flowing of communication. But yeah, you know, codependence is a hell of a drug, and that's one of the central themes here. To have so much of ourselves tied up in another person is not good for you, and it can turn ugly. And while the movie occasionally seems like it's going to address that reality, it usually just sort of, you know, leapfrogs it, avoids it, or, you know what, throw in another sex scene. Why not? It's too bad. There's some things to like here. The setting is obviously gorgeous. Like, it's packed with these shots set against the magnificent, beautiful backdrop of Greece. Our lead couple, they're attractive and they're talented. Like, those things alone should be enough to ensure at least a watchable film, but this one just doesn't live up to the promise of those pieces. I blame the script. Like, there's very little in here that tells us, that gives us, the audience, any clue as to why these people stay together. Like, even with the time leaps, there's just no nuance to any of the story. The connection is inconsistent. Like, a lot of times you're wondering if they even like each other, let alone love each other. You know, the development is shallow and uneven. Like, we're asking far more questions than we're getting answers. And, like, it boils down to the fact that there's no one in this movie that you really want to hang out with. And that's... Look, I didn't dislike this movie, really. But I didn't really like it, either. Like, it's one of those movies that's an agreeable enough passing of the time and not much else. Like, not good enough to bad, not good enough to love, and not bad enough to loathe. Like, this is a line I used, and I feel bad about it, but it's like it's the sort of Monday that not even Garfield could muster up the gumption to hate.
Wow, I like that too. All right, two down, one to go. I'm curious to hear about Arlo the Alligator Boy.
You know, this is probably my favorite one of the bunch. And I say this knowing full well what this movie is. Because, you know, we're long past the days where there was any sort of real line of demarcation between the worlds of television and movies. You know, it used to be TV stars were TV stars and movie stars were movie stars, and you didn't really move between the two. Obviously, that isn't the case anymore. Actors move easily between the two mediums, et cetera, et cetera. So when I learned that Netflix's latest animated film is also basically a pilot for an upcoming series, like, sure, like that's the way the world works now. And that's what this movie is, Arlo the Alligator Boy. It's from first-time director Ryan Krieger, who also co-wrote the script and the movie's multiple original songs. It's a very sweet story. It's this wonderful tale of a young boy who also happens to be part alligator, searching for where he fits in the world. Like, it leads him from the swamps of his adolescence to the bright lights of New York City as he basically takes on a quest to find the man that he thinks is his father. And look, the fact that this is intended to become a TV series could not be more clear. Like, it very much plays like an extended pilot, like introducing the characters who will undoubtedly populate the season to come. I guess they have 20 episodes already, like, on order. But there's also no disputing that the characters are kind of charming. The visual style is very memorable, and the music's really good. Like, it's not a bad payoff for investing 90 minutes, especially if you have little ones who like those sorts of that sort of a musical engagement with their movies. So the basic gist is Arlo, the titular alligator boy, played by singer Michael J. Woodard in his film debut. He's a young alligator human hybrid living in the New Orleans swamps. He was abandoned as a baby, and the basket in which he rested floated all the way to the bayou, where it was discovered by an old woman, an old swamp woman named Edmi, voiced by Annie Potts, of all people, who lives alone in the swamp, and she takes Arlo in and raises him. But, you know, he's never really felt like he fits in. He sneaks away to sort of watch the passing river boats and wonder about the wider world. You know, he reaches a certain age, and Edmi finally confesses that she has info about his past, specifically his old hospital identification bracelet with the name of someone who could potentially be Arlo's father. So armed with this new info, he decides he's going to go to New York City and find his dad. But, you know, he's naive to the ways of the world, and so almost instantly finds himself in trouble, like fleeing for from people pursuing him for reasons they don't really understand. But he happens upon this woman, a young woman named Birdie, played by singer Mary Lambert, this absolutely enormous young woman who understands what it means to be different. Before you know it, they're riding the rails. But then, almost immediately, they encounter even more outsiders like themselves. They wander into, it's so ridiculous, Rich, into a sort of wrestling match in a barn between a farmhand. And I'm going to go ahead and say a sentient ball of fabulous hair named Felicia, voiced by Jonathan Van Ness, best known as one of the cast members of Queer Eye. Felicia is managed by a half-man, half-mouse, very, very little fella, named Teeny Tiny Tony, voiced by Tony Hale. They've got a cat girl who drives the van, and then there's a fish man named Marcellus, voiced by Brett Gilman, who turns up along the way. So this is the group that makes its way to New York City in an effort to help Arlo find his dad. But once they get there, turns out that Arlo's high hopes may wind up being dashed in some unexpected and fairly complicated ways, like even with the help of these wonderful friends that he made in the course of his journey. Now, for a movie that obviously exists to lay the groundwork for a kid's show, it's actually pretty good. Like, it's, again, I can't stress enough, it is abundantly clear throughout just how beholden it is to serving as an introduction. It still manages to engage in some decent storytelling. And, like, for real, when a movie's this interesting to look at, like, a lack of nuance in the narrative is easier to forgive, because it really does look great. Like, it's got this wonder, this poppy, colorful animation style, lots of shapes and sizes on display, and the musical numbers are legit. Like, they are delightful, and a couple of them push far beyond any aesthetic expectations I might have had coming into this film, because those musical numbers are the best thing about this movie. Like, Arlo the Alligator Boy, he is a little dude who loves to sing out his feelings and has no problem doing it. The songs are pretty good, with a couple are even catchy enough to linger after viewing. Like, standard musical stuff, like pushing the story along while also kind of keeping things light. It's a very good voice cast, all that stuff. It's perfectly fine. Like, it's a sweet story. The message is really good. It's very lightweight. Like, the understanding here is that the end of the movie is just the beginning of the story. And that's the reality of the sort of never-ending streaming content cycle. And honestly, Rich, all we can do is cross our fingers, wait for a few years to pass, and maybe, just maybe, we'll get Arlo the Alligator Man.
Something to look forward to. There you go. Well, Alan, you did it. You made three not so bad, they're good movies, at least interesting in your description of them.
Well, thanks, man. I try to do my best. I will say, I think... If your little guy is still feeling like the musical animation stuff, I think he might dig this.
All right, we'll put it on the list then. Awesome. Alan, yeah. We thank you as always, my friend. Have a good couple of days, and we'll do it on Wednesday.
My pleasure, man. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Thanks, Alan Adams of The Main Edge, talking movies here on Pass the Popcorn.